Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 55, Shepherd's Pie and Reductions. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that helps aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I just want to say welcome if you're a new listener. Thank you so much for finding me. As I tell this to everybody, if you want to reach out to me, I'd love to know how you ran into me, where you found the show, any questions you might have after listening to some of the episodes. And you can always send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And I want to mention last show, which I did the time-saving tips in the kitchen, I did have a listener email me. Sebastian from Madison, Wisconsin, sent me an email, and he actually had a tip for time saving in the kitchen. I wanted to share that here at the beginning of this show. So Sebastian writes, I'm a part-time student in addition to being a full-time worker, so saving time in the kitchen is a definite must. One thing that's really helped me out is using a pressure cooker to cut down dramatically on cook time for things like brown rice and beans. Especially when you soak them from the night before, your cook times can go from an hour plus to 30 minutes or less. Pressure cooking takes a little getting used to because you can't check on how your food is doing halfway through, but I like the results better than canned beans. Plus, you can cook a huge batch and freeze it, and you save a ton of money compared to buying canned beans. So that's an excellent tip for saving time, Sebastian. Thank you so much for sending that over to me. And you know, I am probably some point in the future going to do an episode dedicated entirely to pressure cookers and how to use them to save time and to make your food extra delicious. But I'm not sure when that's going to be exactly. But in the future, I will definitely do a pressure cooker episode. But thanks again, Sebastian, for sending that in. That is awesome. Again, if you have a time-saving tip or anything else you'd like to share, send me an email at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Well, as I record this, St. Patrick's Day 2016 is only a few days away, so I thought I would devote today's episode to talking about one of my all-time favorite meals, shepherd's pie. So let's stop beating around the bush and jump right into it. So shepherd's pie. Now, I want to get one thing right out of the way, right up front, and that is, if you are a purist when it comes to calling your dishes what they are actually should be called, you know, from a historical or a cultural perspective, I want to talk about one thing, this shepherd's versus cottage pie. Now, I am guilty of using shepherd's pie pretty much all the time. I rarely ever call this cottage pie. And there's one simple difference between what a shepherd's pie is and what a cottage pie is. So let me talk about overall what a shepherd's pie is. I'll explain the difference right after that. So what a shepherd's pie essentially in its most basic form is some sort of a meat filling with some vegetables, and that's kind of the bottom layer, and then you top that with a pie crust, if you will, of mashed potatoes, and that's baked, and that's simply a shepherd's pie. Now, the difference between a shepherd's pie and a cottage pie comes traditionally in the meat that you use to make it. So a shepherd's pie is typically made with lamb, hence, you know, you're a shepherd, you're watching over your flock, it's lamb, as opposed to a cottage pie, which is basically the same thing, except you're using a different meat, usually beef. So you'll forgive me, I actually tend to use beef in my shepherd's pie, but I still call it shepherd's pie. It's old habits die hard. So I use shepherd's pie all the time when I'm referring to a cottage or a shepherd's pie or anything that's kind of constructed in this manner. So I just wanted to get that out of the way right up front. Now, to me, shepherd's pie is maybe, and I probably say this every time I talk about something I really, really love, but to me, it might be the ultimate expression of comfort food. Now, I know different cultures have different ideas of comfort food. Even regionally in the United States, there's different ideas of comfort food. But my family, at least after they came to the United States, settled in the plains, the Midwest, actually South Dakota, so not exactly Midwest, but, you know, sort of that plains farm tradition. And we were a real meat and potatoes family. So even when my family moved out to Oregon, we still clung on to that meat and potatoes. Most, I know I've talked about this before, but most dinners we had when I grew up really consisted of some sort of a meat, some sort of potato, and then, you know, vegetables or whatever, kind of rounding things out. And full disclosure here, I don't have an Irish or an English or a Scottish or a Welsh, or I don't have any of that in my background, at least not, you know, a few generations back background. I don't have an Irish bone in my body. So we never actually ate anything like shepherd's pie growing up. It was always more of a braise or a stew or roasts, things like that. So the first time I ever had a shepherd's pie, I know I was probably in college. I think we went to an Irish pub in town, and somebody ordered a shepherd's pie, and I said, hey, that sounds good. I'm going to give that a try. And it was kind of like a mind-altering experience. You know, when it comes to food, you know, when you have those experiences where you try something for the first time, and it's like with food, it's so fantastic because you can have these experiences all the time. There's always something new in the world of food that can expand your mind and open it up. I know this sounds like I'm really waxing poetic over something as simple as shepherd's pie, but I'd never had anything quite like that before. And it really, it won me over. So I'd had shepherd's pie since then a few times. And way back when in the history of this podcast, one of the earlier episodes, I even talked about shepherd's pie a little bit, you know, where my favorite versions of this are, you know, in restaurants. But then I started trying to make this at home, and it's really pretty simple. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit. But, you know, the other interesting thing about shepherd's pie, you know, is it's tied into the history of the British Isles very deeply. But I always find it interesting that as old as it is, and anything, you know, compared to the United States, when you're talking about Europe, is old. You know, old for the United States is a couple of hundred years. Old for Europe can be anywhere from a couple of hundred to several thousands of years old. But it's interesting to note that shepherd's pie really probably wasn't even invented until the 17th century, and it certainly didn't come into widespread culinary use until probably the 18th century. And one of the reasons for that, this is interesting, is sometimes we forget that a lot of the iconic foods of Europe didn't even exist until the New World and the Old World cultures were bridged in the 16th century, you know, late 15th and through the 16th century. So, you know, potatoes are a New World crop. They were cultivated first in South America. They did not exist as potatoes in Europe. So potatoes weren't brought back into Europe until about the end of the 16th century. So, you know, 1550 to 1600, somewhere in there. So certainly shepherd's pie, as we know today, certainly could not have been invented before then. You know, the same goes with things like tomatoes. Tomatoes are another New World crop. Chocolate, another New World crop. Corn or maize, a New World crop. So all of these things that we've come to associate with iconic European food, for example, Swiss chocolate or tomato-based sauces in Italy, those could not have been developed prior to the New World having been discovered by Europeans and kind of bringing back those ingredients, those cultivars, and growing them, or at least, you know, exporting them to the Old World and to Europe. So kind of interesting to think of that, and just keep that always in the back of your mind when you think about ethnic cuisines and how really the mixing and the transition and the migration of peoples really affects, you know, how food comes into being. But I go a little on a tangent there with the history of shepherd's pie. There's not a whole lot known about it, actually. There's not a real deep and rich history about it, other than it seems to be somewhat of a peasant dish. And I think that's evident in the fact that it doesn't really seem to be quote-unquote fancy food. You know, it's something for the filling, for example, you can make with leftovers if you wanted to. So it doesn't take a lot of presentation skill. You don't need the purest, most fresh ingredients. You can just kind of make whatever you want into a shepherd's pie. As long as you put that potato crust on top, you're good to go. But the recipe that I have, which if you go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/55, that's just the number 55, you can get to the show notes for this episode, and I'll have a link to my shepherd's pie recipe. My shepherd's pie, though simple, does take a little bit of time to make because I really rely on developing deep, rich flavors by using a process of adding liquids and reducing and repeating that process over and over again until you have a really rich and savory filling that you put into the bottom of your pie. So just to kind of give you a real quick overview of what goes into my shepherd's pie, and remember I mentioned that it's two main components, the filling and then the potato topping. So you're looking for the filling for things like ground beef, shredded carrots, shredded onion, some minced garlic, peas, tomato paste. I have a few spices and fresh rosemary that I throw in there. Then the real explosion of flavor comes through the use of red wine and chicken broth and a process of reducing and over and over those down. So that's the filling. For the crust, I just have a really simple mashed potato recipe where I use Yukon Gold potatoes, buttercream, egg, and I add Parmesan cheese to it. But really, any good mashed potato recipe that you like will work perfectly well for the topping of a shepherd's pie. But let's talk a little bit about the filling. And I want to digress and go off on a little bit of a tangent when it comes to reductions. Because now I've mentioned that the way I really develop deep flavor for my shepherd pie filling is through a process of reducing liquids over and over again. And, you know, reductions could probably have their own podcast episode, but I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to talk about it because it's really an important technique in the home kitchen for a couple of reasons, two main reasons. One, a reduction can act as one way to thicken a sauce. So if you have a sauce that you need to thicken, and you don't want to add anything to it to thicken it, you can simmer it, reduce the sauce, and as the moisture evaporates, it's going to thicken. So that's one way to thicken a sauce. But through that process of evaporation and reduction, you're also concentrating flavors. So it's a double whammy. You're thickening a sauce, and you're concentrating the flavors. So the easiest way I can explain it, and I don't want to oversimplify this, so forgive me if I'm making this ridiculously simple, but imagine you take a cup of water, and you add a teaspoon of salt into that water. You mix it up until it dissolves. Then you take that cup of water with the salt and you put it in a saucepan and you simmer it until the water completely evaporates. So what are you going to end up with at the end of that process after you put that water in and you simmer it? You're going to end up with, in that saucepan, about a teaspoon of salt left over, right? Because all the moisture is evaporated, it's left the salt behind. Now let's imagine you take another cup of water with another teaspoon of salt dissolved in it and you add it to that saucepan and you repeat that process. After the water evaporates, you're going to end up with 2 teaspoons of salt in that saucepan. Now let's say you want to add 1 more cup of water with 1 teaspoon of salt dissolved in it. You put that into the saucepan. Now do you know what you have? You have a cup of water with a tablespoon of salt in that cup of water. So it's going to be a lot saltier, right? Because through this process of reducing the liquid, you've left the material, you've left the solid material behind in that liquid, in this case, salt, and it's just compounded and concentrated and added and, you know, grown basically in ratio as you add more liquid and reduce it down. So you're going to end up with a much saltier cup of water, right? A much more concentrated flavor of salt in that last cup of water because you've been compounding that salt as you've reduced it over those 3 steps. So hopefully that was a clear, simple way to kind of explain how reduction, you know, concentrates flavor. Now just extrapolate that to any time you have a sauce that you've got, you know, chicken stock, you've got herbs, you've got spices, salt, pepper, you know, whatever it is you have in this liquid. Just imagine that when you simmer it and evaporate it and the water evaporates and the moisture leaves that sauce, whatever's left in that sauce is going to become more bold in flavor because there's less liquid to dilute it, right? The ratio is much different than if you put a bunch more water in. It's going to taste watery and washed out. But as you evaporate and simmer and reduce that sauce, the flavors concentrate. So by doing this with this filling for the shepherd's pie, you're really going to develop rich, rich, deep flavor. And what I like to use is a dry red wine for my first reduction. So I might take 1.5 pounds of ground beef, brown that up really good, drain it, right? And then I like to throw in, of course, all the vegetables. I don't want to go through the recipe step by step. You can find that on the website. But when you get to the point to where you add the red wine, you put the red wine in, you let it simmer, and you want to let it reduce down at least by half because you're concentrating the flavor. You're getting that raw wine taste cooked out of that red wine. It's going to be really rich. Then what I do is I add low-sodium chicken broth, about 1/2 cup or 3/4 cup at a time, and I let that simmer to reduce. And then I stir it and then add more and do that again. You can do that as much as you want. And the more you do that, the longer you keep that process on, the more rich your flavors are going to be. But you have to be very careful. I use low-sodium chicken broth and I don't do much seasoning ahead of time because as you concentrate flavors, it's not difficult to come out with a dish that's too salty because you've added salt, you've added salty components, and you've reduced it down to a manner in which there's too much salt now in that ratio, kind of like in that water and teaspoon of salt example. So you want to be careful as you go and go through this reduction process, taste as you go, and then wait until the end of that reduction process to correct the seasoning. So if you do that, you taste it and it still needs salt, it's still too bland, you can add some salt in at that point, to kind of bring the flavors back into balance. So I just wanted to take a second to talk about that, the process of reduction. But, you know, for my shepherd's pie, you don't want the filling runny. You do want it to be, moist, but not runny. So I like to reduce things down to the point to where most of the liquid has evaporated, but it's still moist enough that it'll kind of hold shape. Now, a word about the wine. Wine is great to cook with. It's a wonderful acid. And by reducing it down and letting it simmer over the subsequent reductions, you're going to get a lot of the alcohol taste out of it. You're going to transform the flavor of it, and you're going to end up with a really, really savory filling. If you don't want to use red wine for whatever reason, you don't necessarily need to use red wine. You could use, say, a tomato sauce with maybe a little bit of balsamic vinegar mixed in, for example, to kind of get that deep, red, rich flavor as well. But I recommend using red wine, an inexpensive drinkable red wine that you'd find in your grocery store's wine section will work just perfectly. Whatever you do, avoid the wine that's labeled as cooking wine. That stuff is terrible. Don't ever use that in your cooking. Just use actual, dry red wine when you're making this recipe. All right, so that's really what I wanted to talk about when it comes to this shepherd's pie, is really focus on bringing the flavors of the filling out. And you know, the reduction idea works no matter what you're making. If you're making a pasta sauce, if you're just making a pan sauce from the roast beef that you made, use a reduction to thicken your sauces and to kick the flavors up and concentrate them. It's really a simple and great way to come up with an excellent sauce for whatever you're making. But now, you've layered your filling for the shepherd's pie in the bottom of your pan. While your filling is cooking and reducing, you're going to want to make your mashed potatoes. And then as you put the mashed potatoes over the top of the filling, you're going to want to take a fork, which is at least what I do, and I kind of go over the entire top of the shepherd's pie, the potatoes, and I just kind of make ridges and little peaks and valleys with my fork. Because when you put that in the oven and you bake the shepherd's pie, those little peaks and valleys are going to get brown and crispy, and they're going to add awesome flavor and texture to that shepherd's pie. Now, I will say, when your shepherd's pie comes out of the oven, let it sit for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or so to kind of set up and cool a little bit before you serve it. And I will note that shepherd's pie is something you want to eat that day or within the next couple of days from the fridge. This doesn't freeze very well. So this is something you want to make the day of or the day before. This really isn't something you can make batches of and freeze. I suppose you could, but the texture of the potatoes really suffer once they've been frozen. It's really hard to kind of bring those back to life. All right, so I had a list of things I wanted to talk to here when I went through the shepherd's pie episode. I think I've touched on them all, although probably much more randomly than I had anticipated. So I apologize for flying around if I did. But again, give that shepherd's pie a try, maybe on St. Patrick's Day or anytime you just need a warm, comforting, delicious pick-me-up on a cold day. If you do make it, I'd love to know how it turns out. Please send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. All right, well, I hope you got a little bit of useful information out of that episode about shepherd's pie. And again, I apologize for kind of going off on a tangent about reductions. I might do an entire episode in the future about reductions, or maybe thickening sauces or sauces in general, or maybe multiple episodes. But I just wanted to talk about that because I really think the shepherd's pie, it gains a couple of stars on the rating, if you will, by taking your time and reducing the filling. So I hope you got some useful information out of that. As usual, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do so via email, or you can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. You can also find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast. And of course, if you're so inclined, please tell your friends about the podcast if you think it's of value and you think they'd get anything out of it. Of course, you can always head over to iTunes and leave me a rating and review, or Stitcher, or Player FM, or wherever it is you find and consume your podcast. All right, folks, thank you so much for downloading and listening. Once again, this is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.